So I'm not going to talk about Agra because we agreed between my colleagues that they were going to do the introductions, and so I don't need to repeat that. But actually, and we didn't plan the way that this presentation was sequenced, coming after Louise's, because I think really what I'm trying to do is how can we promote this multiple or diversity of multiple pathways through seed sector reform. And if it doesn't come through, I apologise, but that was what I'm trying to get to. And I've been working in seed systems, I think, about 30 years, like Louise and like many others in this room, and it's one of these things that keeps on going round and round in circles, and we never seem to get as far as we should do. I will talk very briefly about my project, which is called the Scaling Seeds and Technologies Partnership in Africa. This is a project funded by USAID, just to put it into context. A little bit about understanding seed demand and what are the existing seed systems. And then I'm going to go into policies and policy reforms, specifically focusing more on variety release, early generation seed quality control, and then coming up with some conclusions. And some of these points have already been touched upon, like the issue of early generation seed. So my particular project is really trying to scale up the use of improved varieties. So we work in six countries. You can see them in the map on the left. We're trying to improve the capacity of public and private sector groups to deliver quality seeds and other technologies, not just seeds, but fertilizers and things like rhizobium inoculum. Improve the capacity of smallholder farmers to adopt these technologies, and improve the policy and regulatory mechanisms for the delivery of quality seeds and technologies. Now, this particular diagram I got from Lloyd LePage. Lloyd LePage used to work for Pioneer. Maybe he was totally confused by your strategy, but I like this because actually there are so many seed projects going on in Africa, and there is so much money that has been spent. Louise put some figures up there, and quite frankly, a lot of it is money down the drain, if you want my frank opinion, and I think many others would agree. It's big business. It's big business for FAO. It's big business for many different organizations. And also, I think we have to remember that seed, you don't just sort of click your fingers and produce it out of thin air. It takes a lot of planning to produce seed. I'm sure, talk to Pioneer, you know, 10 years ago you were planning what you're producing and marketing to farmers today. And most of the projects that are funded by development agencies come and go in 3 or 4 years. So there's a lot of spinning of wheels and actually not really getting to where we want to get to. So, what is the seed demand? Well, Louise touched a little bit about on this just now. I think Rob Tripp created quite a nice simple typology, but acute seed insecurity, you know, from civil and natural disasters, I'm not going to talk about that. Chronic seed insecurity as a result of poverty. And then the demand for quality seed. And, you know, Pioneer, you spoke very eloquently about this. If farmers see something good, they want to go and purchase it. And it doesn't just have to be cheap. They'll put the resources together to go and get that. But also the demand for new varieties. And Louise touched upon this right now. There's huge investment going on in public breeding, but how do we get all those materials to smallholder farmers? So I'm not going to talk about the first two, but I want to really focus on the second two. We talked about, or Louise mentioned, informal farmer seed systems and then the formal commercial seed systems. Just sort of trying to put this in context where in the informal seed system, seed production and crop production go hand in hand. Farmer seed selection is done in the field. And the regulation really comes through that good neighborliness. You know, you don't provide seed to other farmers, or you don't market seed even in local markets to other farmers if it's poor quality, because you have to live with the consequences in those communities where you live. So there's a lot of self-regulation, and we see these varieties going through social networks, local markets, and even coming in from the formal seed system. And these tend to be very resilient, and we heard that most of the seed actually goes through these types of systems. And then the formal system is characterized on the right. I don't think I need to repeat that because we're mostly pretty familiar with that. But quality control here is regulated externally, and new varieties come through research and development. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the quality control issues later. How are these various seed systems organized? Well, in large multinational companies like Pioneer, you've got this vertically integrated system. They do the research and development, they do the marketing, they do the production. It's all within the company. But in many of the smaller companies and the sorts of investments that Agra is doing, it's more of this vertically coordinated system. What do I mean by that? Well, you've got public breeders developing public varieties, and increasingly those public varieties are going into the hands of small commercial seed companies, but the commercial seed companies don't have their own research and development. They're too small to invest in that. And this is a big bottleneck that Agra has faced. You know, Fred showed this sort of seed value chain. We invest in training plant breeders, we invest in plant breeding, and how do we get those materials from the public sector into the hands of smallholder farmers? And that's what I mean by this vertically coordinated system. So, here are the sort of comparisons between the vertically integrated and vertically coordinated. You've got this mixture of public and private sector investment. You've got applied research and adaptive research, and a mix of players getting involved in this. And this is, I think, where a lot of the confusion and the mess takes place in the seed system development. We've seen that formal seed systems are commercially viable, but these public investments and crop improvement need... You seem to have a gremlin in this machine here. These public investments in crop improvement need to be accessible. So we need to stimulate seed entrepreneurship and reduce the cost of seed. And we have to have a supportive regulatory framework. Now, across much of Africa, I think we've wrapped ourselves in knots with the regulatory system, so that it's so rigid that we're not able to encourage this diversity of impact or distribution pathways that Louise was talking about. We do need effective regulation in certain areas. Quality control for hybrids is absolutely essential. We're seeing now the entry of these drought-tolerant maize varieties. You can't see drought tolerance when you look at seed, but if you don't manage the quality control, you lose the benefits of that. I think the same with GMO traits. We're not dealing with GMO traits in many countries, but it's going to be a huge issue when GMOs do come into the market, and they're going to come into the market, let's face it, but they offer big benefits to smallholder farmers in some areas. So we need quality control, and we also need plant variety protection. We have to stimulate further investment, and we've heard the benefits of commercial seed companies, and if we ignore those things at our peril, I think we're going to not catalyze a more innovative process in research and development. Now, I'm not an economist, and I often have to go back and kind of define what policies are. But I quite like this definition. Public policy can be generally defined as a system of laws, regulatory measures, courses of action, and funding priorities concerning a given topic promulgated by a government entity or its representatives. And anybody who's familiar with the seed sector will recognise this. We have policymakers making laws, we have regulators developing regulatory measures, funding agencies making decisions about where to put the funding based upon some of these policy decisions that are made. And what we've seen is that seed policies are focused pretty much on supporting the formal seed systems that I've talked about earlier. And those policies, I think, were largely adopted by governments in the post-independence period because they wanted to see the benefits of what they saw in the commercial farming sector with, for example, hybrids. And many of the governments invested very heavily in hybrid seed systems through their own seed companies or government parastatals in the early stages post-independence. But and these regulatory measures are focused on three areas: variety release, early generation seed, and seed quality control. And my take on this is that it's been very much of a policing type of activity rather than a developmental type of activity. It's very much, you can't do this and you can't do that, but how can we do this better? And this is what I would like to explore a little bit. Variety release is the bane of many seed companies. Formal release is required based upon agronomic test data. It increases the costs because many governments require 3 years of testing. It duplicates really what commercial seed companies do as part of their research and development and marketing. It ignores farmer preferences. We had a question from the audience. Do what seed companies are producing meet the needs of farmers. Well, if they don't meet the needs of farmers, farmers aren't going to buy it. It's not a committee that decides on these things. And we've seen very big delays in the introduction of superior varieties. We can go to many of the countries where we work, and it's 40 years since a new variety has been released. And this blockage is really because of the release systems are not working effectively. Now, what are the solutions to this? Well, one of the solutions is working more towards regional variety release. And there are three regional economic communities that have been looking at this: SADC, COMESA, and ECOWAS. SADC is in southern Africa, COMESA is eastern and southern Africa, and ECOWAS is in West Africa. These are regional economic communities. And they have now agreed upon a regional variety release system. So that if a variety is released in one or two countries, it can be commercialized in the other countries in that region. But I think we need to go a little bit further than that. And I would actually like to see the need for formal release abolished altogether. Quite frankly, smallholder farmers, or any farmers, they're not stupid. They're not going to go out and buy or exchange or procure seed that doesn't meet their requirements. So why do we put this layer, this barrier in between? Now, there might be justification for government agencies to say, right, we don't want germplasm coming in that is susceptible to a variety that we know is a big problem. And there are disease problems that exist. They don't appear every year, and you might unwittingly bring in a maize variety which is susceptible to, say, maize lethal necrosis disease, which is devastating a lot of the maize in eastern southern Africa. You don't see it this year, you might not see it next year, but in 3 years' time, it might be a big problem. But on the whole, I think if we could liberalize this whole variety release system, we could really unblock the supply of materials both from the public and the commercial seed sector. And there are countries that do this, and one of them is the United States, where we are right today. And we have probably a very dynamic seed sector here. New Zealand is another. What are we doing to do this? Well, last week, COMESA released its regional variety catalogue. I'm pleased to say that that was one of the investments that we funded under my project to try and facilitate this process. Because there are many policies made in Africa, but the implementation of those policies is so poor. You have to put in mechanisms in place to allow those policies to be implemented in an open and transparent way so everybody understands what's going on. So this is the first attempt to do that with COMESA. This catalogue has taken a lot of investment in terms of talking to different agencies, how the systems work in Europe and elsewhere, and you can go and look at this on the website. But this is now so that a company can apply for regional variety release, and once it's in this catalogue, in theory, it should be able to be commercialised in any of the COMESA countries. Now, early generation seed of publicly developed varieties. This is a particular bottleneck. We have seen that many governments lack the capacity to produce and to multiply up the early generation seed, the breeder seed and the foundation seed or the basic seed of these materials that have been developed. And in doing that, there's very poor quality control. So already we're seeing, for example, I mentioned the drought-tolerant maize, we're seeing some of these drought-tolerant maize varieties coming out of the public sector actually no longer possess that trait because the quality control has been so poor. There is a lack of transparency in marketing. Often you talk to small seed companies, they go to the public agencies that have done the breeding and they say they want to get hold of early generation seed, and the public agency says, oh, I haven't got any this year, or they've sold it to their friends around the back of the door and it's not available. And also we see that there is limited or no intellectual property management. Now, you might say, well, why do we need intellectual property management of publicly developed varieties? Well, I think it's very important to maintain those varieties in the public domain, if that's what you want to do. Or to use intellectual property management to stimulate investment in marketing in certain geographies where seed companies have traditionally not gone. So there are different ways that that can be used. So what are the solutions to this? Well, we're exploring a number of avenues, but first one is to liberalize the idea of early generation seed and support seed companies or entrepreneurs to produce that. Don't just leave it as a monopoly in the government system. We can encourage specialized basic or foundation seed companies. There's some very good models here in the United States. Holden's was a specialized seed company that supplied many mum and pop seed companies with improved germplasm from the work that they did. We can contract commercial companies to produce early generation seed of publicly developed varieties, because those commercial companies have the expertise to do quality seed production, so why not get them involved in this? And we can pay them to do that, but at least we can get that material out in quantity to feed into those different systems that Louise talked about. We need to develop alternative models for different crops. We have to recognise that hybrids are different than vegetative crops and OPVs. So it's not a one-size-fits-all. We have to recognise the differences that exist. And we have to introduce and communicate appropriate plant variety protection laws, regulations and management systems. This is a huge area. I think we do in the policy-making area. We're very poor at communicating what we mean by policies and what regulations mean. Many seed companies, they come into this area and they just don't understand what is going on. There's a complete lack of clarity about intellectual property management. Many national programs don't even have a system of intellectual property management. Seed quality control. Well, what we've seen is in Africa, seed quality control is dominated by the public sector, and there's a lack of capacity in the public sector to do this quality control effectively. Our seed industries are expanding. The public sector investment in regulatory capacity has not expanded to keep up with it. So in many ways, the regulatory systems are just going through the motions. They're not actually doing proper quality control. And the systems that are there now are very expensive to administer. If you have to go and pay a seed inspector to travel 300 or 400 kilometres to your field, and you have to pay him a per diem, or her a per diem, a night out, and the transport costs, by the time you've paid all those costs, you've actually spent more money than the seed is worth. And we're seeing, I think, in many places, the application of inappropriate standards. You don't need to apply the same standards for an OPV crop that is self-pollinated as you do for a hybrid maize inbred line. So what are we looking at as solutions to this? Well, the first one is we would like to see a cadre of independent and certified seed inspectors. Now, that sounds very fancy, but we believe that you can identify people in communities and train them to do seed inspection. Many good farmers already possess the skills. They're already used to selecting seed in their own fields, and they've been doing that. But it's just bringing some additional science and knowledge to that process and helping to develop that cadre. We're very lucky today that we can communicate with people in remote areas through ICT technology, through mobile phones. And if we're going to get the regulatory agencies on board to do this, I think we have to provide a mechanism for them to at least see what is going on. And we can use ICT platforms to improve traceability of seed. And then we would like to empower local entrepreneurs and or communities to produce and certify their own seed. And in many countries, you have systems like quality declared seed. In Tanzania, this is worked to some extent, although the regulatory systems have put limitations on where that seed can be sold. They say you can only sell it in that district. What we're seeing now is that commercial seed companies have seen the expertise that is possessed by these local seed producers and are actually contracting those people to produce their seed. In India, you've got the system of truthfully labelled seed. So these solutions basically allow you a more sort of a lighter system of regulation, but maintaining that seed quality control. So, in conclusion, we need to examine the regulatory constraints affecting different crops, simplify and decentralise the regulatory functions, and then support pluralistic models to allow a more diversity in regulation and hopefully stimulating more impact pathways. Involve farmers and farming communities in seed policy formulation and recognise and balance the need of commercial seed companies with farmer demands. Oops, acknowledgements.
Thank you so much. Any questions for Louise?
So one of the things that I think a lot of us have observed with national research programs and the CG system as far as breeding strategies and long-term outlooks is that they are extremely beholden to the donor agency, as far as what direction they take. And when we at Pioneer think of a breeding strategy, it is a long-term effort developing heterotic pools of inbreds every year, improving the inbreds, improving the hybrids forever. That's a breeding strategy, based on your quality, your yield, whatever you're focused on. But I think the CG system, I think they have 64 different donors that supply resources to the CG system. Each one of those donors has a different idea of what the CG system should be doing, and then that, a lot of times, that cascades down to the National Research Program. Do you have any idea or advice on how to better educate the donor agency?
Maybe we should suggest that as the next topic for Simone. Because it is a tough thing, and I've worked for the CG, Louise, you worked for the CG. I mean, the change in funding strategies, I think, has had a huge negative impact on breeding programs, which need that long-term investment. So I kind of agree with you. But I think the CG also come under criticism because they have not been as aggressive enough in the past, and I think it's changing now. It's really reaching out to get those materials that they've developed into the hands of smallholder farmers. And there are many research questions that can be looked at in doing that process. I mean, you talked about it in your presentation. I mean, that's very good research that needs to be done. It's not just about crossing plants and then saying, I've released a variety, off we go. And you know, it would be nice to see the research institutions coming and doing research on the development process. I don't think there's nearly enough of that. I think these two things are...
On the other point, I think, to follow up on what you just said, and I don't have the numbers, and don't quote me on this, please, but, you know, we talk about breeding, and in Pioneer, we spend less than half of, speaking of corn, maize folk, we spend less than half of our budget on breeding, and a big percentage on testing. And that's what I see as a gap. You know, they develop these varieties and then here they're supposed to work. We spend hundreds of millions of dollars a year testing in environments to try and predict what products are going to work in those environments. And that's a huge expenditure, and it's tough to get paid for that, you know, with donors and understanding all that. But I like to remind people, even within our organization, that when you run a yield trial, you know, every experiment has a treatment, but the treatment on a yield trial is the environment. So you have to test a lot of environments, or else you're not going to be able to predict how that product's going to perform across a broad range of environments. And that's what you're looking for, not one that does well under this very narrow range of conditions, but one more broadly adaptable.
Do you see the regulatory system as currently existing in many countries in Africa as inhibiting that testing process?
Absolutely. Not only in Africa, and like I said, I've spent a lot of time in China, they have a four-year registration process. I define it as 80% political, 20% technical.
Okay.
Maybe 100% political in some cases.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, looking out for your brother or looking out for your partner in what's advanced in the regulatory system, and it's corrupt. I understand why it was initially developed just to protect the small-scale farmer, but I think in many cases it's doing just the opposite. Abolishing it would make it a good market.
Another question?
I'm glad that you pointed out the differences between hybrids, OPVs, self-pollinating crops. When you look at price ratios between seeds and market prices, you're up around 11 or 12 times to market price in much of Africa on hybrid maize. On soybeans are about 5 to 6 to 1 over the market price in those many places in Africa. When you look at Louise's slide on the dominance of the local market, those are about 50%, 30-50% of the market price.
Market grain price.
Grain price,
yeah.
Is what those are going for. And then thinking of some of the systems that have been proposed here, I just wonder how at those sorts of market dominating marketing systems, how you support, for example, plant breeder rights or even the breeder and foundation seed systems necessary to link up to the SBR.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you reduce some of the costs that exist in the regulatory system now, I think you can bring down some of those differentials. I mean, you know, if you could shorten that period that you get new materials into the pipeline, that would significantly reduce the cost of the hybrid maize, for example. I think there is going to be justification for continued public investment in early generation seed. You know, let's face it, we have a public education system in most countries. Why? Because education is not naturally a private sector. I mean, there are private sector companies, but let's do it more efficiently. I think the point I'm trying to make is that early generation seed can use public money, but it can actually contract more efficient private producers to produce it.
And I guess I'd take a little bit of an issue with your statement about reducing costs. Everybody wants to reduce costs. We deal with that all the time. But I think we really need to focus on the value delivered. I mean, if you deliver enough value, the cost will be okay. And we have kind of an unwritten policy within our organization. If we deliver $3 of value to a customer, we'd like to capture more.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if you take that approach and look at let your price be driven by your value, I mean, the farmer's going to win.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, to get that value, you've got to have a very strong pipeline, right?
Pipeline.
Well, in terms of new products, hybrid.
I mean, our turnover. North America is a unique example. Our product turnover is very rapid. Yeah. But in the small scale markets, I mean, it's much slower. We've got a product that's very popular in Ethiopia. It's probably 15 years old, but it's still. I mean, you run on these every now and then, and they're just, you know, Hall of Fame hybrids that just work under a lot of conditions. So our product turnover is much slower in more developing markets, mm-hmm. because the growers have to have stable products.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes you a while, no matter how much testing you do, to really identify those real stable products.
Thanks very much, Richard. Thank you very much.
Once again, let's give a hand to all our presenters. You did a wonderful job. You know, it's quite informative, and I enjoyed the transformative work you guys are doing on the continent of Africa, in particular where I'm from, and all over the world. And I hope we can continue this dialogue about public-private partnerships and continue the innovation to feed 9 billion people in the next few decades. Thank you very much.